You're,
wait a minute. Technical difficulties. I was muted. Starting off hot.
Strong start.
What's up, boys? How are you?
Good, man.
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing great. Been locked away in a high stakes PLO gambling den for a couple days.
You look like it. You definitely look like it.
So that was rough. And now here I am. I'm about to go to Asia, and I'm tired.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately, Ansem had to had some issues with one of his sons. So we hope everything's okay there. So he had to call it off earlier today. We got a new guest pretty quickly. We got Sobi on. I think they're both in the Solana ecosystem, shitcoin trading. So they overlap a little bit in that sense. So that's good. But let's talk about those codes and some current events and our sponsor and get all that going.
Start with sponsor.
I'll do it. Yes. As you guys know, the show is sponsored by Rollbit. look at that. Rollbit hoodie.
There we go.
That's pretty sick.
Is that what you nice. Sold your RLB and bought the merch? Is that what you did?
Yeah. Exactly. No, they sent me a nice hoodie so I could walk around town with it on.
Love that.
Nice.
We used to have these Rec Guy Rollbit hoodies from when we did the event last year, and I didn't even get one. I'm like,
really, you need a Rec Guy Rollbit hoodie collab.
We got one. They sponsored the Rec Show actually last year.
Yeah. No, this hoodie's tight.
Yeah, that's cool. Anyway. I love that. As you guys know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, one of the largest and most active crypto casinos out there. If you want to do anything from sports gambling, leverage trading, crypto futures, NFT borrowing, lending, trading, or even just regular casino games, make sure you check out rollbit.com or rollbot.com, depending on your jurisdiction. As usual, we'll have two codes to give away on the show. The first code is SOBI6225, and I put that on the YouTube stream as well. Check out the pinned tweet on the space if you want to watch the show live on YouTube as well, and make sure you stick around because we'll be doing some of the loot bot spins once again at the end of this show. And that's it.
Yeah, people have been doing well on those loot box spins, that's for sure.
We're going to talk about what happened with Rollbit this week. That was a big...
Oh yeah, of course. We're going to talk about Rollbit.
In news, right? They've announced to burn the token. Epic fumbles going on across Rollbit influences.
You would think we'd be making money, like a shit ton of money, on these.
What I loved about it is you knew the influencers who'd like bought RLB, and you knew the ones that had sold it because they didn't say a fucking word.
Yeah, no. It's, I'm in a severe depression now. We got in pretty early, I'd say, on the Rollbit train. I don't know. We might be in one of the first crypto Twitter like partnered.
We
may have been the first. And then I don't know. It was definitely sub one penny when we were in there.
Yeah.
We had plenty of chances. They constantly said we're gonna work on some utility. They told everyone out in the public they were working on utility. For some reason, I'm just not smart enough to buy it and participate in the utility of it going straight up.
Yeah. We've done a lot of ours on the lottery, but then we did. Well, I personally bought a bag recently, and OSF had some in our treasury, so we still had enough. But there were definitely people who came in late, and I think did better on the trade. And it's like,
I mean, I know some personal people who made a lot of money.
Bit of a game changer. Yeah. Are you so you've been looking at markets at all, or have you just been PLO for the last
last 4 days? Honestly, I've only been pretty much playing poker the last couple days. I'm looking at the markets. Just around town. There's a big game in the local area here.
Big five four day.
Yeah, no, literally. But the games like start at like 5 PM and then go to, you know, like 2-3 PM the next day. Just because people start to get stuck, they're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, these people are just sick in the head, degenerates. But they're like, money moves around, chips move around. So it's fun. It's a good time when you win. That's how I can explain it. But
yeah, I mean, it sounds like a Dan Bilzerian story out in the Hamptons.
Yeah, no, there's games like these all across the world and country, like just these big high stakes private poker games that go on, and like, you know, it's like a curated invite list. It's a lot of fun people. It's a good time. But again, they're fun when you win. I did well this week. Besides the last day, I pushed it as a typical degenerate would, and tried to, you know, play one too many days and then gave back the money. You stay in a casino too long, sometimes you lose. That's what typically happens to me, at least. But what else we got here? I mean, and we were also talking about the ROB move. I mean, in the update, the buy and burn. I don't know, man. That's pretty crazy. So they're constantly, they now have a dashboard that shows like the revenues, and you get, they're buying back. It's kind of like, you know, lowering the float with their revenues almost.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I think I saw they're buying back like $300,000 already today. Like, it's good. I mean, I don't know. It makes a lot more than DeFi protocols, but who knows?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like an actual fucking.
It's a game changer, but we'll see. We'll see how that one develops. But yeah, the rest of the market's kind of it's heated up a little bit over the last 24 hours.
We're back down again.
It's so over. I think it's not quite. It's not completely over yet, right? Like it's not fully over.
I didn't look at the stock market, but I thought some people were saying today that market's not doing well. Finally rolling, right?
Stock market's not doing great. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's summer. I think we had said in the beginning, we probably shouldn't have been trading all summer, and would have saved a lot of money. So that's why I'm going to Asia and not trading there, and gonna be scuba diving with some sharks. Hopefully, not gonna eat in. You know, but if I do, I do.
Yeah. is there like a shock? Are you just going to go generally, or is there like a big thing you're trying to see?
No,
there?
I mean, yeah, it's going to be in like Indonesia and, in some really remote areas, the Komodo Islands, Komodo Dragons. We're going to be doing some hiking there. I mean, you're definitely going to see like whale sharks, but those obviously aren't, they don't harm people. They eat like fucking plankton. But there's going to be hammerheads. There's going to be tigers. There's going to be a lot of sharks there. But when you're scuba diving, you want to see sharks. It's kind of like fun and awesome. It's not as scary seeing them when you're under the water rather than on the surface, to be honest. You feel more like they're on your level. I don't think they usually just like attack people underwater from my experience thus far. Not
sounds like one of those rules that works until it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So... We have subbed out Ansem, and we've subbed in Sobi. He was nice enough to join us on super short notice, so maybe we should go ahead and bring him in and see how he's doing. What's up, buddy?
It's been busy, dude. Just working on a bunch of shit. Working on this like L3 thing for games that we're building with Arbitrump, and then also being really active in governance. Fucking cheating coins left and right, like losing money when I shouldn't be. It's so bad, dude. I'm trying to buy Rollbit when it was on Sol, and I keep looking at the chart and I want to fucking cry.
I think everyone wants to cry at that chart, man. Like, I was looking at it when we first started, and it was just so many zeros.
I bought it on Sol. Like, it wasn't like easy to buy, and like, you know, the things like when they're not easy to buy, but like
always bullish, dude. If it's hard spot, dude, it's rough, man.
What even was this? Is like, what was that? Is it Radium that you would buy it on? Like,
yeah, no, I would say, I think we talked about it. I was like, yeah, they'd like fucking swap some shit to Radium and like, I don't know, do some other weird shit. Go through some backdoor that had like a 50% rug chance, probably. Like, I don't know. You're on Solana. Things are different over there.
No one knows how to read the Solana Block Explorer, dude. No, it literally makes no sense. It does exist, but it's like Sumerian fucking hieroglyphics, bro. You can't make sense of it.
Is that a feature or a bug? I mean, you know, I feel like Sam was he involved in that? So he mean that might have been a feature, so can't track it well.
Basically, he was like, fuck Zach. Zach's not gonna figure out what's happening on this chain.
Did you see that photo of him recently at that? I don't know what the fuck he was celebrating, but at that birthday party.
What was up with that? I don't mean to get racial, but it was all black people and then Sam Bankman. Like, what is the context there? What's happening?
I don't know about this photo. Can someone show this photo on a screen somewhere?
You haven't seen this photo? It's like someone invited the Grinch to their birthday party. Or like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. It's like, it is epic.
That's disgusting. Wow. It's disgusting, dude. He looks like he would steal your money. He looks like a little money goblin. He's like hunched over.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't find the photo, but I'll take it.
STF birthday. I'm sure you'll find it. It must be there.
It was at his birthday party?
I mean, FTX birthday, and it was just a bunch of people getting fucking the ass. Was that too aggressive for the show?
The Twitter search right now, I swear to God, it is probably the worst feature I've ever seen. Like, you just type in anything, and it's just like 3 pages of scams, and then you just get some random tweet at the bottom from like 3 months ago.
FTX birthday didn't come up. So it looks like some guy smashed his phone in this one. Anyway, so it sounds like he's doing well.
No, he's not looking that better, but yeah. Yeah, but you're big on fucking other chains. You're like a bit of a other chain sort of guy. Like, you know a lot about, I would say, at least in the top 3 people that I would ask any sort of technical question about blockchains. Like, you know about pretty much every single blockchain out there. You've probably bridged to it in some weird fucking way. You've got weird DeFi chains going on and all the different ones. So yeah, what's the alpha? What are you actually like looking at?
Well, I think the thing is, it's also like, I want to caveat with you could do all this chain hopping shit, or you can just buy things that are going to go up. I think the thing for me is, you know, we're trying to build a game company, and it's always important to know like where the infrastructure and stuff is going. A lot of stuff around ETH is like really research focused, which is cool. And you basically have to follow it through all these like different forums and see what's happening. Like L2s, for instance, like we did, our first drop was on Sol because I thought at the time, this was 2 years ago, that Sol had the best user experience in terms of speed and like fees. Because, you know, Polygon has deep reorgs. It's not like really the best chain. Now, like, I wouldn't, you know, L2s have that same experience. Like, there's no reason for you to go on like some Solana shit when you can just like go on your own OP stack or use Arbitrum, right? So I think there's alpha and just like staying on top of things. If you guys, dude, this is like, I'm actually about to leak some real alpha right now on how to stay on top of stuff. So how do I do this? Can I share my screen? Is that a thing?
Yeah, you can. Should be able to.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can.
Present.
So this place right here, code for, oh, let me close this. Whoops. Code for Arena. Code Arena or whatever.
This let me like close the screen.
You never know what that would have been.
Yeah, you never know, huh? But this shit is where it's at, dude. So this is a competitive code auditing website. So this has been this like new paradigm of code auditing. Instead of like paying, you know, whatever, like fucking quant stamp, you just basically go, here's $100,000, here's $200,000, try to fuck our shit up. And if you fuck it up, we'll give you the money, right? So it's more of like find the bugs instead of just like paying people. And so you have all these different audits that are happening based on different like protocol updates, right? Like you have this pull together thing, you have like Tangible, Blue Reserve, Moonwell. Amphora Arcade, like I like to go on here and see what protocols are like putting together like audits, because that means that they're either shipping a new feature or they're getting ready to ship a new feature. Like, it's a much higher signal than going to like digging through the documents, digging through the Discord, having like 700 dudes in the Telegram going, why is the coin not going up? Like, it's hard to dig through all that, and I find this cuts through the noise a lot. So I follow stuff like this. I stay up to date with things are just going around. Like, I think the scaling conversation is kind of fucking stupid, though, because we keep just going like TPS, 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 and there's literally no reason for more TPS. Like, people just like to gamble, which is why I like the GambleFi narrative is pretty interesting, because people are like, yeah, this is the best use case for blockchain is just straight up gambling. Like, let's try to quit acting like something different. But I do think there's a lot of alpha in staying on this stuff, because I feel like in general the sentiment's gone a lot more bullish, even though Keyboard Monkey keeps trying to short everything. But like, I think
no, not anymore.
Oh, holy, for 2 weeks. No, we're fine. We're fine.
I'm not shorting anything. Keep going.
Chad, see, this is why the bias shift is nice, right? It's like, it really does feel like things are about to start heating up. Like, it feels more like you want to buy a dip than like short a rip, basically, right? And it feels like the sentiment is changing. And we saw this last cycle with some of the best performing coins were coins that like were new. Like, didn't exist, right? And I think you're going to see a lot of that this cycle. And so I find something like this, like Code Arena or whatever it's called, pretty valuable in staying, because you'll see things that aren't going live into mainnet, and you also get an idea of like how well funded something is. Like, for instance, Arbitrum's offering a $90,000 grant for like this audit thing, right? So that's kind of, it's like interesting signal for that. So you can see where are things actually going to be in production, right? Like, if you're getting, if you finish your code and you're auditing it, you're getting close to a release or something, and that can like let you signal more effectively, I think. But mostly just been working on stuff, so it's been hard.
What was the name of that website, just for the listeners?
Code Arena, but instead of like A, it's a 4.
Right.
4, 4, 4, 4.
Yeah.
4, 4.
It looks like a pretty sick website. This is actually some solid alpha for people to start looking into like what to look at. Essentially, it's pretty sick.
Well done. You said something there, which is you think like the whole scaling thing is getting a bit ridiculous. I kind of agree. Like, it seems as though there's 1,000 L2s right now. You're building an L3.
Well, the reason why I think it's getting ridiculous is because a big trade-off for scaling is liquidity, right? And for most users, like, would you be willing, if you're truly crypto native, would you be willing to have faster transactions or whatever for like lower liquidity? Probably not. There's a reason why ETH is so fucking expensive all the time, because people want to use it, right? And they're willing to pay for that premium because it's highly liquid. And I think people underestimate how much of these assets are valuable because of like the liquidity premium on them. Like, I think NFTs are just valuable because they were, I mean, illiquid for a little bit before Blur, but they're just like highly liquid collectibles. If I want to go buy like a trading card on Panini or whatever, that takes fucking forever versus I just go on OpenSea, boom, ape into something, I have it, right? So I think the liquidity premium is huge. And I think there's a lot of stuff around interchain messaging right now that like Layer 0, Hyperlane, Chainlink are working on. So I think what you're going to see is, for instance, for like the L3 we're building, we're not focused on like, let's get as much TVL as possible on this. And like Offchain is building the whole chain for us, which is an amazing partnership. Really happy that we did that. They're building us all the bridge contracts, like Sequencer, et cetera. And they're like a world-class team. And, you know, we'll have this token, powers the whole network, et cetera. But the thing we're focusing on is, like, if you're gaming on our chain, like, we view it as a backend. So if you're just playing the games and you're just playing, like, using the NFTs for consumptive or utility, they should stay on the chain because it's the least expensive to interact with them. But the second you press that list button, we're going to abstract, like, we're working with, like, Layer 0 on this, where we're going to abstract that away and it bridges back to Arbitrum 1 and lists on, like, OpenSea on Arbitrum 1, right? Because there's fucking $1 billion worth of ETH there that we'll probably buy NFTs. And so instead of trying to go like, let's get this ETH to migrate over to our chain so we can be like, we have 200 mil in TVL, like our token should be worth this amount because, you know, people use TVL as a metric for like market cap for some reason. I think you're going to see teams move away from that and see more like modularity. So I think what I mean by that is like scaling for the sake of scaling is kind of weird. There needs to be more thoughtfulness around like, yeah, you may be able to scale something, but now you're just basically building a database with no liquidity. It should be focused on like, how can you create an application layer or execution layer for something that can still tap like the liquidity for things, right? So for instance,
that's been a, like, your example is a perfect example. Like, there's a bunch of layer two NFTs, which you have to trade them on the layer two, and it's kind of annoying. You're basically building a layer three and you're saying how you can bridge it back. All I ever hear about with these bridges is hacks, fucking things going wrong. Like, how do you make this bridging thing work?
Good question. So there's not all bridges are created equally. So the bridges most people use, the way they function is like, let's say I'm bridging to, you know, let's say Harmony One or Phantom or whatever, right? And the way most of these bridges, like Synapse or even Layers here, the way these bridges work is like they're called economic bridges, right? I guess it would be the term. What you're doing is you're depositing your ETH or stables or whatever into a smart contract. That smart contract is then just going like, we're issuing you an IOU. Like, here's a coupon that's good for 1,000 ETH, right? You can go use this 1,000 ETH or whatever. And then when it's time to bridge back, we burn the coupon and then send your funds from this smart contract over, right? Now, the issue is that problem is, like, there's issues with attack vectors on those bridges where you can have like an unlimited mint bug where I can like mint an unlimited amount of like IOU ETH on whatever chain, and then I can just go burn all that IOU ETH and take the real ETH out of the bridge, right? Because the people have been incentivizing LPs with their assets. Like, you put your ETH in this bridge, you'll gain 3 or 4% based on the fee spread. There's, with L2s, there's proof-based bridges, right? So the benefit of a proof-based bridge is that you won't have a loss of funds. You won't incur like that 1%, half, 50% basis point, no fee or anything. So you can just bridge. The problem is when you want to bridge back, it takes 7 days because there's this challenge period of like submitting a proof, making sure like the L2 data matches the L1 data.
That's just optimistic though, isn't it? Or is that the same for ZK?
I'm actually not too familiar with the ZK stuff. I spend most of my time focusing. Like, I think ZKs are so far away that it's not really like worth it for me right now. But I'm sure it's something similar with regards to that, right? Some type of proof challenge period. There has actually been EIPs that have been put forward to be like, let's reduce the challenge period. And like Arbitrum and Optimism have pushed back on that, saying like, no, let's keep the challenge period as is. And so then when you go into like L3s or these OP stack chains, there's interoperability between like the sequencer. And it all depends on your trust assumption, right? So like for us, the way that our L3 is going to work is most of the block production is going to be amongst this highly trusted committee. We're going to make some crazy PRs on who's in the committee later on. It's like it's actually some fucking pretty big names. So really excited about that. But they're highly trustable, right? Like, they're not going to try to screw anyone over. It's the same way that like Nova works. And so when you're bridging, like that enables like fast bridging because people can reach consensus quicker. But yeah, that's like the big thing is there's different types of bridges. So when you're going across the optimistic rollups, if you're using the proof-based bridge, there's not real risk. Like, even the way we've designed our L3 is, let's say for some reason the committee can't come to conclusion, what happens is the L3 actually goes into roll-up mode, which the only way you can get funds out is by going through the proof. So it'll take 7 days to get funds out, but there's no loss of funds. And because you're now in roll-up mode and not using like the DAC, your transaction costs go up. But this is going from like a fraction of a penny to like 20 cents, right? It's not a massive increase. It's a huge, it's a nice delta for like your security. But that's the big thing amongst why I think scaling for scaling is, or like modular design scaling is kind of weird, because basically your weakest link is the weakest link for the whole ecosystem, right? Whether that's a bridge that people use a bunch. I know this shit's kind of like fucking boring, but I think the scaling situation is not as authentic as people say. Like, even Optimism, for instance, they don't have fraud proofs live, right? Like, that's literally, that's what like OP is, like base is built on. And it's like, yeah, there's no fucking fraud proofs. You just got to trust us, bro. And I think there is this.
What does that mean, like, exactly? What do you mean by fraud proofs?
There's no fraud. Like, you can't submit a fraud proof. Like, if I see there's fraud happening on the chain, I can't submit it. Like, it's all white. It's all centralized through them. So the way the fraud proofs work is when it's a real like quick fucking, you know, crash course on L2s is like they're just a series of smart contracts that post data to L1. That's all they are. It's like they do a bunch of shit and they post it to L1. And there's the way that these things make money is there's a how much it costs to post to L1. Like, there's this, you know, however, like, let's just call it 10 cents or whatever, right? And then they charge a spread between how much their transaction cost is versus how much it costs for them to post. So that's how these sequencers make money. I think the Arbitrum sequencer makes like 7 million, 8 million a month or something. That's all in ETH, right? And so when it posts, when it's posting that data, there's that challenge period I was mentioning of 7 days. When it's posting the data, it actually posts the stake. So it'll post like 100 ETH, 50 ETH or whatever, right? As the stake. You can go, wait, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong with the data you're submitting. There's fraud happening. And you can be like, I'm calling bullshit on this. And if you're right and you challenge it, it'll reorg everything and you'll get the stake. So we get the 100 ETH, 50. There's that economic incentive. That's why people call it an optimistic rollup, because you're optimistic about the world in the sense you only need one honest actor to keep the chain.
That's right. Why you need the 7 days, right? That's why you have the review process.
Exactly. So you're
basically saying it's just pointless in Optimism because they wouldn't even allow you to do that.
Yeah, so there's some inauthentic shit that's happening around scaling, but like, what's going to be nice is when you have pooled like Chainlink CCIP right now. What's really cool is you can basically have like stables, and you can swap stables from one to the other without having to bridge. It'll just do it seamlessly, atomically. It'll be an atomic swap, which means like, here's X amount and here's Y amount, and it just swaps instead of doing the whole IOU thing. And I think that's going to make a more seamless experience. Like, ETH is literally the best casino in the world. Even with L2s, most people are on L1 because that's where all the shit coins are launching. You know, that's where OSF is buying all the fucking Pepe, right? Like, I think you're seeing more and more people move on chain. Like, Keyboard Monkey is a Chad derivatives trader, but I'd imagine he's probably even looking at, like, I need to buy shit on chain now. Like, that's where a lot of the flows are going.
So, yeah. You just touched upon that. Do you think there's another? I remember last cycle or when I first met you, you were a big other L2 guy, other L1 guy. Do you still think that that's the case?
No, I was only in that time a proponent of other L1s because of gaming. Because of my bags. I actually never held much soul at all, to be honest with you. I think for me it was just like, for gaming, like I think gaming is going to be huge in crypto. I don't know how it's exactly going to look like. It's possible we could be one cycle early. Games take time, all this stuff. Like, maybe it's more of these Gamblefy games or what catches on, whatever. But I just think that you can't have a shittier user experience for people. Like, you can build, I think, like luxury gaming stuff. You've seen like this on-chain gaming where, like, you know, Doomsday, which is a pretty cool on-chain game with like settlements and stuff that just had a 200 ETH prize pool. Like, people will pay for that, right? Because it's kind of like a risk game or a skill game like poker, where people will pay to play a game like that. But if you're playing a game for fun, and like, it's obviously fun to play games for money as well, right? But like, if you're just playing for pure intrinsic fun, you're not going to pay like $200 for a gas fee, right? Like, it's just not compatible. And L2s at that time were not on mainnet yet. Like, the fact that L2s like function and work, they've been talking about this for like since literally ETH started. They're like, we're gonna need L2s. We need to figure this shit out.
Of course,
yeah. And they've been live production grade with a bunch of TVL in them. I think ARB is like the number three exchange or number three chain by DEX volume, right? Like, Coinbase, a publicly listed company, just launched a fucking blockchain today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that's insane. And it's using these stacks that people have been working on for so long. And I think that's the problem with blockchain stuff is, it feels like we're slow to move, but it's like, dude, if you break shit, you really break shit. You know, everyone here, our net worth is in some fucking little skinny Russian guy's hands. You know, like, you could fuck this whole thing up. And you saw it with Sol and Sam. Like, Sam, the little fat goblin, fucked everything up for people. And
Sol, need to get that photo.
I actually just found it.
No, you did.
I put it in WhatsApp chat. One of you guys can share it on your screen.
I mean, look at the state of him. You should check. You not to share
look at the state of him.
I love how everyone else's photos
I'm
blurred.
Sure, he's like pretty stressed out worrying about you know, all the stolen money every night.
Anyway, it's just so it is good. A hell of a picture. Okay, look, I what I like to speak about you is you're kind of like one of those guys who's the because you go to some of these conferences. I don't know if you've been to crypto conferences. They're kind of not great, but some of them are full of just infrastructure people, and you kind of bridge that infrastructure to the actual application layer. It feels as though the infrastructure layer has been built out, or it's now being built up pretty strongly in ETH, and yet the application layer we've all just decided is now just going to be casinos. Like, do you say gaming is kind of the other one. Do you see anything else from the application layer that makes you like more interested?
I think part of this whole thing is like a chicken and egg problem. I think there's an issue with like the infrastructure folks who are like, most of the I'm a fucking idiot, bro. I just read shit. Like, that's all. I just read things and go, okay, how the fuck does this make sense or not? Like, I just try to learn. A lot of the things in this space are just out there, right?
What's your background? We should actually go into this a little bit. What's your background a bit?
Bro, we'll get into it, dude. But I'm just saying, like,
that's not like an ethnicity question. I think the debate's not in general.
This guy's smart. He's fucking. He's.
But what I'm saying is, I think the infrastructure people are like too focused on the infrastructure and not what it enables, which is like the annoying thing, right? Like, we're talking about this whole interoperability thing, intermessaging thing. Like, oh, here's what problem it solves. Like, there's no siloed liquidity. It makes a better user experience. You can like change the back end for things. I think the problem is like a lot of the applications you'd want to build that could be maybe non-financial or like truly new and innovative, you're not going to even build it because you're like, if this is successful, there's nothing that can support this. Like, you kind of know that instinctively, right? You're like, if I build something that's this big, like if you build like an on-chain Twitter, I mean, regular Twitter barely fucking works. Imagine if you put this thing on ETH, it'd be a wrap.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think there's that. And then also on the application side, I think there's a misalignment, I think, with incentives where VCs know how to make money on infrastructure in crypto. They don't know how to make money on applications that aren't DeFi. Right. They don't know how to make money on that. Like Blur, for instance, is an application, very successful launch. I've never seen a company that like just came in and big dicked an incumbent and like has completely killed their market share like that. But that's, it makes sense to people. Like, oh, this is a new way for people to trade NFTs, blah, blah, blah. But it's not a non-financial application. I think where the issue lies on is like, there's no leading venture, like Paradigm. I love the Paradigm guys, but if you go to their website, it's all research, like high difficult tech shit. That's like hard to understand. This has nothing to do with like a consumer, right? They don't know how to make money on this stuff. So they're not going to fund this stuff. Right. And I don't think the grant programs are going to fund it either because no one's done it before. Like even I'll be honest with our experience with like gaming, like fundraising has been rough. We've done a pretty good job of fundraising, but it was rough during the bear market. And we got a lot of renewed interest with this partnership with Arbitrum because they're like, oh shit, it's like a chain now and the token's a gas token. Like that makes sense. I know how that works. Right. Other than like trying to explain to these guys how gaming works. So I think, in my opinion, and this could be wrong, is I think the reason why you don't see these applications popping is because no one knows how to make money on applications. Like the Curve guy. The Curve guy's rich as fuck buying $40 million mansions. All he did is make – I mean, Curve is actually pretty badass. But that, you know what I mean? It takes like a team of 20 people, 15 people to do that, and you don't need a lot of consumers. Like if he just has seven large market makers using his protocol, he's printing money because the volume is in billions of dollars. Right, like the lifetime value of some of these users is super high.
It's a fair point. I feel the funding market for now is mainly tech style funding, which just gets the infrastructure, and you kind of need like the NFT crew to come in with like the ideas around IP, but they all spectacularly failed, and the vast majority of them have, which is kind of sucked, I think, for some of the application layer sort of stuff. You need like the art media people to start making money for it to kind of take off as like a culture or a application layer in certain ways.
I think the first iteration of gaming tokens, we also learned a lot of lessons. Like shout out to Pixel Vault and G-Funk for revamping everything with GG. I think like that is a really good example of people that were building shipping things and going like, this isn't the best model. Like we need to fix it. Right. We need to have like this unified token. Like we need to figure out our emissions, all that stuff. You know, we're lucky in the sense of we're quietly kind of building stuff and seeing what people were doing right and what people were doing wrong. And I think a big part of like first iteration of GameFi is studios or projects or whatever raised money on a token that was like supposed to be used in the game.
Yeah.
So like it's supposed to be this economic incentive, but you raise like 30% of the supply on investors with like pretty, you know, lenient vesting terms. So they're just cheating the fucking chart, bro. They're just cheating the fucking coins onto your gamers' heads on like these unlocks, and it's just not right. And we saw it with NFTs. Like I bag held a bunch of fucking NFTs, thinking that like fucking clones would launch a token. I remember yelling at that KBM super drunk, and it never happened. And my fucking coins just went to my bags just went to zero.
So we talked about this in a WhatsApp chat before you came on, actually. That's
like you lost interaction, apparently.
I was like, yeah, we see Sophie last. It was
I was like, dude, I'm fucking an idiot, bro. And like my bags went to zero. And I think people just realize like there's a lot of like learning in that space, right? It's like, what the fuck are we doing issuing a token? Like we're not ApeCoin, like we're not gonna get all these like it's a different thing between launching a token and like launching an NFT. And I think we also saw, I mean, KBM was pretty right on this too, calling like the NFT top. Like, dude, we were so, I was disillusioned as fuck. Like, what the fuck am I doing, bro? But yeah. Doodles, bro, Doodles raised at a multi-billion dollar valuation.
Dude, it's crazy.
That's insane.
$700 million
Doodles raised. Why? Who the hell? Like, yeah, why was that?
How is that even? No sense. For like IP, that makes no sense.
Just disconnected from the real world completely. Like, who the hell?
Moonbirds was a few hundred million or proof. Obviously, Bored Apes was just 4 or 5 billion.
Yeah.
But so Bored Ape had the token aspect.
Yeah.
Like, it did have that token aspect of, like, boom, 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 you know? And that's...
I mean, what's the token even do? It's just a lot. It's just another way for, like, investors to, you know...
To make...
exit liquidity.
Yeah, basically. I mean, right Kobe now. Had a good write-up on that, like, on that staking thing, too. And it's just, it's funny, man. Like, I think we were, I mean, this was my, so when I joined in the, like, right in the beginning of the bear, right? And I, like, was super poor, whatever, trying to get my shit together. And this is, like, my first cycle where I was, like, making a bunch of money. And I'm a fucking idiot. Didn't, I wish I just, like.
Can we go back there? So, like, well, how did you get involved? Yeah. Like, what was your background?
Still for the full background here, Toby.
Okay. So, I got, like, I knew about crypto in high school. I was, like, selling hats in T-Fortress 2 for Bitcoin. Made a few thousand dollars in the summer, like helped my parents out with rent or whatever. Thought I was a genius. Could have just kept it. I wouldn't even be on this call if I just had that BTC right now, dude. I'd be losing it all in some backroom fucking poker game. But
you can live in the dream like KBM.
And so then I went to college, and in college I like read the Chainlink white paper. And everything just kind of clicked for me. Because at that point, like, this is so cringe to say that, but like the, you know, Ethereum had been out, smart contracts had been out, but there was no way to connect external data to smart contracts, right? And the example that always made sense to me was I would do like little side bets with my friends on sports games. And it would just be so annoying to go to like one of my fraternity brothers after like he lost a bet and be like, can you give me the $25? Like, I hated doing that. Like, if they didn't send me the money, I wasn't going to like hound them down. It just felt weird to me. And one of the use cases was like, hey, what if you had a smart contract with like a binary bet? Like me and KBM, we both put up $25. He bets like $25 on the Eagles. I bet $25 on the Chargers, whatever. And, you know, the game happens. There's an Oracle that pings like the NFL database, finds out who won the game, and just sends the funds over to that person. It's like, shit, that makes hella sense to me. Like, that solves a lot of problems. It automates a lot of these things. It's just a lot of trust minimization. Then started thinking like, okay, what if you can like apply this to derivatives, financial applications? Like, those are multi-trillion dollar industries, right? And then if you like apply that to like the settlement layer, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, started like paying attention to the space, had never invested before, was always like, you know, grew up really poor. My parents don't speak English, blah, 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 immigrant, yada, yada. And I just got enamored with this type of stuff. I was like, this is so sick. Like, to me, the intersection of blockchain of like, everything I loved of like finance, economics, tech, like gaming, all kind of into one. It just scratched this certain itch for me. I think it scratches a certain itch for a lot of people. Like, I don't think anyone here is going to ever leave. It kind of just sucks. It just sucks you in, dude. You know? And so then I dropped out of college. I was working at an AI startup, like was not qualified to work at this startup at all. Like, I lied on my resume, talked like on the phone with the CEO for like 90 minutes. And I was like, we're just having a casual conversation. And at the end of it, he was like, yeah, I think we'll work together. And I'm like, what the fuck? Sick. This was like the weirdest experience. And I got them to pay me $1,500 a week in Ethereum when ETH was like 80 bucks. So I was just like stacking ETH on that. And I'm probably the only idiot to pivot from like AI to crypto. But then when like DeFi summer happened, they were like, dude, you don't have a fucking college degree. Like, you should go back to school and you can still work here. And I was like, bet, I'll go back to school. So I started taking classes at like community college, and I was like going to go to some state school because I had to pay for my own tuition now because I was making just above like financial aid requirements. So I'm like, I go to fucking Chico State, a piece of shit school, and I'm like sitting there in DeFi. I had just farmed a bunch of money in yams. And I remember sitting there. This was like COVID. It was like 2020.
What's that?
I
remember sitting, yams?
Yams was like this DeFi farm where you just – and this was single side. The early DeFi V1 wasn't even like you had to LP things. You just got to deposit coins. You just deposited coins, got more coins. It was just like deposit link, get other coin. No impermanent loss risk. You just get the money for free. And I remember I was that, dude,
I love
it
that.
It was a new paradigm, bro. We were gonna change the world.
That's just a Ponzi
scheme. Don't ask questions, just fucking take your coins.
It was a Ponzi scheme. And anyway, I remember I farmed like five figures of yams in like a week or something. And I'm just sitting there going like, I'm on this Zoom lecture and I'm like, I made more money than this fucking schmuck that's like lecturing him about databases. Like, what the fuck am I doing here? And we had like a midterm next week. And I was like, fuck this. I'm not going to the midterm. I'm on the chain. I'm checking the chain. I'm like, I'm just going all in on this shit. The following week.
Rookie was on this show a few weeks ago. He literally said the same story. Like, he said the same story. He was in a lecture hall, and he was making money more than the lecturer. He was like, I'm quit.
But this is where the part of the story goes bad. I fucking no-show my midterm. I'm like, I'm going to just – I'm done. I'm like, my grades, I'm going to get all Fs, whatever. I don't give a fuck.
the yams pool bricks. Like that, there's like an unlimited mint bug that happens. My fucking coins are worthless. And I'm just like, what the fuck, dude? Now I need to like really get after it. And so, you know, then farm like Wi-Fi, all this other stuff. And, you know, just started like investing, started reading a bunch, like just got hyper obsessed with the stuff. Then I think for me, it was NBA Top Shot that made me understand like NFTs kind of really, even though I had that DeFi background. I'm a huge basketball fan. And to me, I was like, damn, this just makes more sense to interact with IP like this. Like for me, like I couldn't have half the shit that KBM in his like living room. I mean, his wife probably takes care of a lot of the shit, but I would break everything. Like I'm a fucking idiot, dude. I like move a bunch. I lose everything. I was like, physical goods just kind of – physical collectibles to me are hella cumbersome. And I was like, this just makes more sense to have it like this. Like you can pass it off. There's no degradation, et cetera, et cetera. And then I think recently I'll get into this later, but I was like, this is the new way to experience IP. Like then I started like really thinking, I was like, why did I like crypto so much? And I think part of that was just playing video games, like playing RTSs and strategy games, all this stuff. It's a lot of the same resource management, right? Like that micromanagement versus the macro management. Like you're playing those two kind of games in one. And I was like, dude, like gamers would love this shit, because like yield farming was literally like, it was reminded of RuneScape. Like people were like, dude, this is it. Like this is the new server. Like you need to fucking go farm this and you sell it and you farm this and you sell it. Like even the word farming is not a financial term. Like no one's going to ever use, like if you're like selling options for like the premium, no one's going to say, yeah, dude, I'm farming Nvidia right now. Like no one's like says that vernacular, you know? And so it's already gamified from game part one. I'm like, dude, gaming is going to be huge in this space. I don't know how it's going to be or when it's going to be, but this is what it's going to happen. Then one of my buddies I co-invested with a bunch had invested in this guy, Toby's company, who like this dude's a fucking chad. He made like Clan Wars, ran IGN's indie game incubator, like ran an early skill gaming platform that pushed like 500 million installs. And, you know, put me in touch with them. It was a good fit. We started Xpopulous together, the game studio. He's our CEO, my co-founder, and just been focusing on gaming since then and just staying, you know, staying up to date with other shit. But I think it's been interesting. The best part of everything has been just meeting people. Like crypto brings the craziest fucking people together of all different walks of life. And to me, that's really exciting. I think that it takes a certain type of person. I think this is going to be the last cycle, like, people that I feel like outliers are going to come, because I think Ansem tweeted this too, but I think this will be the last cycle where crypto will be a fringe asset. I think it's going to become like very mainstream after this, or we could all be idiots and it's going to zero. So there's also that possibility. But then so far I've just been staying up to date. Like the things that I've been having a lot of fun with recently is being a fucking Arbitrum delegate. Like I'm one of the biggest delegates on Arb, and there's like 6 million Arbitrum delegated to me, and I'm going around and like reading all these proposals and shit, and I'm just like,
what does that mean? Yeah, like you're just like a big dick player on Arbitrum. Like,
people have just delegated their ARB tokens to me, and I am an investor in Arbitrum. I invested in one of their rounds, but you know, people have delegated their tokens to me, and you just participate in the ecosystem. Like, I'm like taking calls with random teams, giving them feedback on. It's like a fucking job, but they don't pay me, bro. They should fucking pay me, honestly.
You don't get paid. But,
I don't get paid, dude. I don't get paid. I'm doing it for the love of the game. Love of the game, dude. Oh, but the crazy I wrote this whole rant about it today was like, there was this whole – so Arbitrum token has been live for 5 months, almost 6 months now, right? Nearly 50% of that token is held by the Treasury. And the token's worth almost $12 billion, right? $11 billion some change. That's a lot of poker games, dude. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of money in that thing. And – people have been really hesitant to deploy it because of this whole like AIP one thing. And it's like, I don't know if you guys have student government in fucking not America, but it's like the ASB kids in high school are basically like gatekeeping $4 billion, $5 billion fucking dollars because of like bureaucratic bullshit. And it's just the craziest thing I've ever seen. Like there's so much alpha on just being on these fucking forums. It's like the same 50 people talking in public about literally, what should we do with $5 billion? Like, that's fucking crazy to me. That's like a boardroom of like a pretty largeable company that gets to have these conversations. It's been frustrating though. Like, there was this Camelot proposal. Camelot's this big dex on Arbitrum, and they were trying to get some incentives. And a bunch of delegates were like, because I'm not gonna lie, like I was like, I know when I'm gonna vote. but I may be swayed by other people's opinion. And so I was reading people's things, and everyone's like, I'm voting no because there's all these frameworks we're working on. And like, I want to vote yes, but I'm just going to wait 2.5 months. I'm like, this is the dumbest fucking reason to not vote yes on something, because crypto moves super fast. I'm like ranting about this stuff now, but like, that's what I've been spending a lot of time on, because I do think the interesting.
It does seem like there's so much money, right? Like, I'm looking at this in DAOs, like, the funding that you can get for certain ideas is just, I don't know, the bar seems low for me for a lot of money a lot of these things. Even Arbitrum just has tons of fucking money, right? Like, and it's just like,
it's billions of dollars.
To people. And I don't know, if you had an idea, any sort of idea, like, just, I don't know, hit up Sovi, it seems like.
Well, it's just fun. Like, I think this is like the craziest part about crypto, right? Is like, I think in capitalism, like, the purest form of virtue signaling is money. Like, if you actually believe something, like, put your fucking money on it. And I think that's what's cool about like these grant programs and everything and these incentive programs. And I really do think that, although I'm not the biggest proponent of incentive programs or grant programs in general, I think there's a lot of people on ETH L1 right now that if some threader was like, you can fucking make, you know, an extra 13% in ARB tokens for like farming on this, like, a lot of people would bridge over and they would stay there, right? And then we would start moving more applications and stuff to L2 where they actually function. Like, I don't think people are prepared for what's going to happen when the bull market does come back. We saw when, you know, Pepe and some of these shitcoins are popping off. Like, gas was expensive, dude. And this is like just 10,000 of us fighting each other on chain. Like, what's going to happen when the TikTokers are back and like everyone's like back on ETH? Like, it's going to be unusable, right? There was moments during the NFT bull where if you could be like, oh, damn, gas is expensive. What's happening? And you check the chain and it's like, oh, there's an NFT mint happening and like everything's just expensive now. So I will see what happens. But I do think in general, I'm going to shut up and let you guys talk. But I do think in general, like, the next run is going to be even more redacted than the one we just had. I think it's going to be like out of pocket.
Inshallah.
Yeah. I mean, I hope it is.
It could like be cope.
I don't know. It seems like it feels like right now a lot of money is like not coming in. I know there's a lot of money sitting there waiting to be put into grants and like an ideas, like you said, with Arbitrum. But then in the market in general, it just feels like everything's stagnated. Maybe it's just summer, though. Maybe I'm hoping it's just summer.
I think it's summer, but I don't know.
Volumes are very, very low.
Fucking non-existent.
Yeah, which is not great. But I mean, there is some money coming in from TradFi, like in terms of like the public funds. But yeah, it's, I think just the volatility is gone, which means that why the fuck would you trade? Like, the vol went. And so, like, all of that stuff doesn't make sense. But I think what do you think of all this? We've only got 10 minutes left. But what do you think of all this real world asset stuff? Like, that's the other thing that people keep pointing at as the base for the next bull. And I look at a lot of this stuff and I'm like, yeah, I think this could be huge. But what's your view?
So So I think RWAs are going to be huge, but I think people are focusing them in the wrong places. Like, I think people go, the meme is like RWAs, like real world assets, huge market cap, right? Huge fucking TAM, total addressable market, because it's things like government issued securities. It's like real estate. Those markets are going to take fucking forever to tokenize. And if they do, it's not going to be some fucking startup, bro. That's going to capture that market. It's going to be like Chase Bank. It's going to be Goldman. What's going to be, they're going to own that. BlackRock's going to own that part of that whole thing. It's not going to be any of us. I think, and this is something that I'm a large stakeholder in and an advisor to, is this company called, here, I'm just going to show my screen again and show my shit one more time for the vibes. So this is Minuswap. This is a like RWA platform for sneakers, and they're going to expand to other collectibles. And I think, going back to like NFTs, why they are so valuable is because of like liquidity. I mean, look at Mando and OSF, dude. They got that sweet Machi liquidity without leaving their wife and kids. Like, that was pretty sick. You know what I mean? And they just dumped on the kid, moved on. And that's like that. I was thinking about this recently because I'm trying to learn from bag holding stupid fucking bags and fumbling. And I'm like, why were these things worth any money? And definitely there was a bubble and hysteria, but I think they got to these large exuberant prices because they were very liquid assets, like with regards to regular collectibles, right? And the market's not obfuscated. Like, it's very transparent and open and like a global like order book, etc. So I think with RWAs, the real kicker is going to be like sneakers, trading cards, etc. to start. And then I think that's like, if you're trying to make like money as like an angel investor or venture, like I think it's going to be like shit like this basically is where you'll find an edge. I don't think it's going to be in like large other stuff. Like to me, something like this can go and like the pillow is like, imagine if you had something like StockX or Goat with Blur, like bidding pools incentivized into it. Like that's crazy to me. Like imagine if you could live in a world where there's 50 mil TVL ready to ape into like sneakers or trading cards and on the bid side at any moment. That to me is like, and it really interesting. So I'm really excited about, you know, working with these guys and helping them out with stuff. But that's where I think like the RWA stuff is going to, at least that's what I'm going to pay attention to. I think in the intermediate term, there's probably a lot of money to be made on DeFi protocols that are like memeing about this shit because it's going to be a big narrative. But I just think that the winners in that larger market are going to be like, it's going to be local regulators are going to want local winners, right? And I think for the larger RWA stuff, there's a lot of value in like, imagine if you could like take on like Fanatics or something, right? And like take on that whole, is it Fanatics? The trading card guys where they just print fucking money, right? I think it's like Top Shot did so well at first, but their execution was horrible. There's definitely something there in a consumer app of like digital collectibles with some physical element for like sneakers, trading cards, etc. I don't know what it's going to look like.
Rolex has recently, which I was like, oh yeah, this could be, if they stop moving watches on chain, stuff like that, I think it'd be quite big.
So what was your biggest loss out there? I want to know now that you're talking about those CloneX losses. We got to get that in at least before the show ends.
My biggest loss, dude. Fuck. Let's see. But it's been a lot of them. It has to be either Inverse Finance or Juul. Is one of the two. So like my Juul bag was worth, so I don't think I ever lost money on Juul, but I round tripped like a lot, you know, round tripped my ticket. But I remember specifically in October, I had like a 7-figure Juul bag and I was like, what if I put all this into Magic when Magic was like 10 cents or something? And it went crazy. I would have probably max staked my Magic and like locked it up anyway. But there's that. And then Inverse Finance, I had like a medium to high 6-figure position and it got hacked. And then I just lost it. Well, the clone stuff I never spent. Oh, Parallel, dude. Parallel is probably another big one up there. That's another one. I actually remember. Yeah, the trading card. Their game's really good and stuff. And I just bought, like, their NFTs were just going for a lot when I had a bunch. I remember actually being on Ice Bags' boat and he was like, you should sell this stuff. And I was like, dude, it's going to 2X from here, buy your boat, buddy.
My clones.
Yeah, I was like, buck clones, bros. Fucking token, bros. Go moon, dude.
Okay. Well, it's happened to a lot of us. These round trip tickets.
We're not going to round trip this time, dude. We're not going to round trip this time.
Nope.
I think
that's because it's going, you know, straight. What's
nice is having friends is hella beneficial, bro. Like, you need someone to be like, dude, what the fuck? Dude, bought a fucking statue for $100,000 for a house I didn't even buy, and I can't even afford the fucking house. That's like retort. Like, that was clear top signal. You're like, yeah, dude.
Yeah, no, that wasn't good. Frenzy is not so friendly.
Not so, dude, they scammed us, dude. They fucking got us, dude. That was the most expensive dinner I've ever been to in my life. And I also remember there was this time where we were all like, I think it was NFT NYC or something, and Guy's Galaxy had just bought this noun with like a weed head.
Yeah.
And he bought it for like $400,000 and everyone was like, bro, you're a genius. Like, you stole that. Free. Like, free Grail vault.
Wow. Oh god, I'm gonna puke.
I think we've all said that though as well. We've all said that for some sort of 6-figure purchase. Like, oh my god, I can't believe nobody else is bidding.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. You know, battling out for the MSJQs or whatever. Yeah. 160K.
Good times. Good times.
Oh my god.
All right. Well, on that note, do we want to ask the last question and we move on to the spins?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah,
thank you for being a last minute guest, by the way. So
yeah, appreciate you being
on, man.
Yeah, you're the only option we had.
The minority thing, you know, how to get another one in here.
That's cool. Right, I said it may have come up.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Last question for you. What's your best advice on how not to get wrecked?
Damn. Don't listen to me. I don't know. I think the best advice on not to get wrecked is literally, like, if you're up a bunch of money, just sell. Like, if you're feeling euphoric, literally the best thing you can do is, like, actually press the sell button and walk away for a little bit. I think the worst thing is when you hit those big wins, you just keep going. And, like, when you're on a heater, you're on a heater, but you just keep fucking going. And, like, at a moment, you have to just – I'm trying to get better about this. We all have that voice inside that will say, like, stop. And you just tell the voice to shut the fuck up too many times.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you have to, like, listen to it, like that instinct, you know. And I think that's a big part of doing well in trading in the markets, I think, is knowing when to trust your instinct, even if it feels like the market is rough. I feel like journaling can help with a lot of that, like figuring out, like, what the mindset is. But, yeah, probably just control your emotions. When you're up big, back away. Like, you're not going to miss out on anything. You'll have clear-headed thinking afterwards. Like you guys did after you – you know, had a huge win with the apes. Like, you guys were like, okay, let's chill for like a week or two and then reset. I think if you go in from that momentum, you risk too much. That's where I made a lot of my losses, was making a bunch of money and then rolling those profits into really ill-advised or ill-thought-out plans, just thinking I could keep the momentum going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you have to change your sizing as you make more money.
Great advice. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. All right, cool. Well, yeah, Shabby, thanks for appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, guys.